Tonight, the topic is What's Next? A recap and look forward of the 2020 election. The series is presented by the Central Arkansas Library System, the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, and KUAR FM 89.1. I'm Sarah Kellogg with KUAR News, and I'll be guiding the discussion this evening. And before I introduce our panelists for the evening, I want to thank both the Central Arkansas Library System and the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County for partnering up with us for this event. I also would like to give a brief explanation over the format of this online forum. We will be asking our panelists a variety of questions, but we also want to hear from our viewers. So if you have a question, please use the question and answer function on Zoom to ask it, or if you're on Facebook Live, you can ask it there. While you are free to use the chat, I will not be monitoring it as closely as I will the Q&A function, so that is the best way for me to see it. Someone on our team is also monitoring our Facebook stream. So if you're watching through Facebook and leave a question there, we should see it there as well. All of our participants received our topics and questions ahead of time so they could prepare and come with ideas, statistics, whatever they wanted to bring to the table. For each question asked, participants are free to answer questions and comment on each other's input, and we'll then move on to the next question. Now, please help me welcome our participants for our Issues That Matter forum. We have Jason Davis, a former member of the Pulaski County Election Commission. Hello. We have Dr. Janine Perry, who is a professor at the University of Arkansas Fayetteville and the director of the Arkansas Poll. We have Arkansas Senator Missy Irvin, who represents District 18, and Michael John Gray, chair of the Democratic Party of Arkansas. Thank you all for joining us tonight. So let's just start with, and again, we'll be ready to unmute ourselves and get going. So let's begin with my first question, which is kind of, what are your thoughts on the outcome of the 2020 election? How will the decisions made on a national level and on a statewide level impact Arkansas overall? And whoever wants to start can start.
I'm sure none of us have any thoughts about the 2020 election. Not at all. I would just offer that from my perspective, and it's so different from the national perspective, this is a stay the course election for Arkansas. Turnout was up slightly, but we're still probably going to be the third lowest in the country. It'll be a 40-year record for us, but that's because we're usually near the bottom in terms of turnout and have been, of course, for more than a century. The margin of victory at the top of the ticket races was really wide before in similar races, and actually grew wider, which statistically is actually kind of hard to achieve. There was no change in our congressional delegation, despite a really high dollar race in the second district. The Republicans actually slightly increased, so they now have a true supermajority, which is really important in Arkansas legislative politics, as the other panelists know. And the fact that that the legislative redistricting amendment actually didn't make it to the ballot, and redistricting is now in Republican hands firmly. People might forget that the last redistricting process was actually one of the last thing Democrats did on the way out the door. So that just kind of secures a super majority Republican monopoly for the foreseeable future. So that's the way I see the election, at least here in Arkansas.
I agree with that. I think that overall it was a very well done election. I applaud the Secretary of State, first of all, for coming out early on in the pandemic and saying we're going to do everything we can to make sure people can show up and vote safely, whether that's through increased absentee ballots or whether that's working with the counties to make sure that we have hand sanitizers, styluses on board. Really a well done election given the circumstances.
So, Jason, first hello to all the panelists, and Sarah, thank you, and everybody that's watching. Jason, I bet you are glad you're a former member of the Election Commission just down the road. It's probably a little more raucous than this panel right now. What do the 2020 elections mean to Arkansas going forward? I was disappointed with turnout, but I think what it should do for those that were expecting large turnout, that were expecting the numbers to mirror what the polls were showing, that just hoping it so doesn't make it happen. That there has to be some real organized work in the state around candidates, around ideas, around issues, and that work, that energy has to translate into doing the work and getting the vote out. And that doesn't just mean knocking on doors a month before the election. That means utilizing the legislators you have, utilizing the leaders that you have, the people that have the microphone or the platform, to speak out on issues that matter to people that aren't voting, matter to disenfranchised voters, matter to areas that maybe feel like they don't have a seat at the table. If the legislators, especially the legislators that have more of a primary to worry about than they do a general election fight, if they're not doing that, that's what first piques people's interest to get them to want to vote. So I think I can tell you all about how I'm happy with the national politics and not real happy with the outcome in Arkansas. But the real answer is, I think this people thought we had a real shot. The Democrats had a real shot. And I think that the Democratic Party for a long time, and maybe they got it this time, is, hey, it didn't just happen because you wanted to. You got to go out and make it happen.
Hi, this is Senator Missy Irvin. And again, thank you so much for having me on this panel. And hello to all the panelists. To explain, I am in the car in the middle of Alabama, driving to the Razorback game in Florida for this weekend. Thankfully, I have avoided a hurricane. So, anyway, I just appreciate the opportunity to speak with everybody and to be able to participate with these panelists and great discussion on the election. I think, you know, the results in Arkansas were probably ones that I anticipated happening. I was surprised. I thought everybody ran a very good campaign. I thought I would agree with the comments that were made by the previous panelists. I think the election was held smoothly. It ran very efficiently. It was very effective. I think increasing early vote for an additional week was the right thing to do because you had, I think, a higher turnout in early vote. And being prepared for that, which they were, all across the state. I do applaud those efforts. I think you're correct. I mean, you have to have a well-organized campaign, and you have to, and I think that's why you see some of the issues, ballot issues passed, and some that, and one that did not, because of the organization of the campaign around those.
So,
I also think, you know, not really some by that, but I also think, you know, redistricting was brought up in that, but I will remind folks that, you know, even after that, it's very difficult to maneuver those maps, and so even though the Democrats were in charge of that last time around, and us going into that this time around, I'm not quite sure, you know, it's very hard to really make sure that those districts, we actually picked up more seats after the last redistricting. So overall, though, it's, you know, it was not surprising to me in Arkansas.
And so I kind of, in the race, and we kind of mentioned it, in the race for Arkansas, second congressional district, polling showed, you know, essentially a tie between candidate Joyce Elliott and incumbent French Hill. And however, on election night, Hill won by a margin of around 10 percentage points, and polling differed on a national scale as well. So kind of, again, it seems like we had this difference in polling. So why did polling differ from the outcomes, and what can be done to improve it?
I'd like to start off with this because I actually gathered some data on this. My neighbors had a lot of questions on Wednesday morning for me, and Thursday morning and Friday morning, and also Saturday morning. And so when I feel anxious, I turn to data and I use spreadsheets and I make tables, and then usually I feel a lot better. If I may, I actually have, I made a little table, and there are actually two. There's one for 2016 and the battleground states and what some of the polls, most of the polls aggregated showed, and then what the outcome was. And it's not a good record, as we all know. But the one that I've actually made, understanding it's preliminary, we're still counting votes in some places, you all know that. This is actually the one that I made for 2020. And here's what it looks like. The shaded cells are the misses. And so it shows 538, very common, right? Forecasting, some aggregation and other modeling, a little more razzle dazzle. Real clear politics, if anybody looks at that, is just an average of the averages, and it's a lot of polls. And one thing you can see, if you're able to see this clearly, whatever device you're looking at, is that the story that we got about polls failing, probably because we were primed, understandably, about polls failing in 2016, at least when it came to the presidential election, They actually did quite well in 2020. It's just that they didn't deliver what we were promised or threatened with, depending on your perspective, Republican or Democrat. They didn't do it by 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I want to point that out. But that said, that's one answer. Another answer is to offer, however, that when they were wrong, the presidential polls, and then even more than that, quite markedly, the Senate polls, the U.S. Senate polls, when they were wrong, they were off in an almost uniform direction. And that's when pollsters get worried, right? Because it means that there's a problem with our samples, and or there's a problem with the way that we anticipated the electorate actually looking. And there's so much conversation right now with the American Association of Public Opinion Researchers and all kinds of other people to try to figure this out. The best thesis that I've seen so far is that Democrats were trapped at home. They really, really don't like this president, and they were more likely to answer the phone and answer the questions the pollsters were asking, more so than Republicans. It's as if they could cast another vote. if they could just let someone know how much they don't like this president. So we think that that's the thing that we didn't pick up this time, just as we didn't pick up that people without a college education were somewhat more mobilized in 2016 than we had seen in previous elections. So there's a lot more to be done. It's too early to be autopsying the body when it's still at the scene of the crime, as Nate Cohn wrote recently for the New York Times. But those are the things that we know so far.
We'll go kind of on questions on the election process itself, the election itself. And so in your opinion, and all of your opinion, considering the country is still in the middle of a pandemic, considering there was an unprecedented number of absentee ballots cast across the state, and what are the long-term impacts for this particular election voting-wise? Are people, you know, are some people just going to be absentee voters now because they experienced it and they liked it, or more people going to early vote? I'm curious what you all think the long-term implications are.
So half the country loves absentee balloting and mail-in voting right now, and about 5 million less than that hate absentee mail-in voting. So I think we've got a lot more discussion going on around that. I think that this shows that there are opportunities to improve upon how we vote, alternatives. When Arkansas went to early vote, which, by the way, some states don't have, it was a really good idea. However, if you are in rural parts of Arkansas, that early vote place may be one spot in the county. And if you live in rural Arkansas, you may work an hour out of the county and live 30 minutes from where that one spot is. So we've got to really look at, I prefer the opportunity to early vote as much or better than an absentee type system. However, it's not necessarily conducive to everyone, especially the working people in rural Arkansas, unless they happen to live in the town where the one location is. However, we've seen we are breaking the seal, so to speak, that mail-in ballots don't have a bunch of fraud, that it is safe to do it, that an opportunity, but I think you'd have to see real effort from the leadership, the Secretary of State's office, to inform people how to send a request one, how to make sure they get them in correctly. So there are a lot of opportunities because of this election to see how we can improve voting and to dispel some of the notions, unless, like I said, you're at the meeting and at the Pulaski County Election Commission meeting right now. But for most of the state, to dispel the notions that there were fraud or overall issues with mail-in ballots. So I think that is a positive, but I think that if we're going to have some conversations around how we vote in Arkansas, it's got to start with how we expand early voting, especially in rural Arkansas.
I think you're absolutely right, Chairman. You know, one of the things, you know, when I was on the commission, the way I approached the job was very simple. I look for a reason to make a vote count, not to take it out. Unfortunately, that's not the way everybody approaches a job, but that is a job. The job is to find every way to count a legal vote. And give the benefit of the doubt to the voter. And I think you have too many instances around the nation, and even some here in Arkansas, but mostly around the nation, of people having issues with mail-in ballots. But overall, it's a very safe process. It's a very secure process. It's tons of regulations around it. And it's a step in the right direction to open up the ability of everyone to vote, regardless of their physical disabilities, regardless of their worries about going to, I stood in line for 2 hours to vote in a crowd. in the middle of a pandemic. And some people wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. Everybody was wearing a mask, everybody was trying to keep their distance, but still, there are some people who would not feel safe doing that. So giving them that ability to go through, to drive through downtown Little Rock and drop off your absentee ballot, I think was absolutely a wonderful way to help increase the ability of people to vote. But having said that, elections are fraught with human error. And so you're never going to be able to take out any notion of fraud. Somebody's going to try to game the system. Our goal is to try to hone that process and find a way to make it as secure and safe as possible to ensure that everyone gets a chance to vote in whatever way possible without having to make them stand in line on one day a year, every 2 years.
This is Senator Garvin. I think I'll chime in on this. So I think first of the, I agree or disagree. I think Arkansas has a mail-in ballot. They're a secure ballot that her ID is, that was described. Stone County, Mountain View is Stone County, which is where the early voting spot is. And everybody has to go to the grocery store or to the gas station. And so generally speaking, that's where your grocery store is going to be. And so, you know, that there's lots of opportunities for people to vote, and they open those sites early and they close them later to accommodate those folks that are working. They also were open on Saturdays. So in rural Arkansas, I think it really actually works very well. I've always early voted. I've actually hardly ever voted on Election Day. But I think absentee ballots are important, and I think that making sure that they're handled correctly is the right thing to do. There is going to be voter fraud, and we want to make sure that that process is safe and secure to maintain the integrity of the election. And I think we've done that in Arkansas. I'm concerned about some of the things that are happening around the nation, because at the end of the day, the Americans are in their voting system.
So, Sarah, if you'll let me, I agree that early voting is doing well in rural Arkansas. I think we can improve on it. I think it's still disproportionately geared to those who have transportation or live closer to the early voting sites. But if somebody ever wants to do an autopsy on this election in Arkansas, Dr. Perry, I think part of it would be, does the requirement to submit a copy of an ID with the absentee ballot disproportionately affect a certain population, whether it be the elderly population, population on the lower economic spectrum, or a racial or ethnic population? I think that we understand the politics and why that's required. Whether we agree or not, it doesn't matter. We understand why that's required, but does it disproportionately affect those votes coming in?
And yeah, I know. We're talking about rural Arkansas here, but just to kind of brag on Placid County for one sec, especially since they're getting beat up right now. Placid County did have 12 voting early voting sites this time around. And on top of that, for the first time in, as far as I know that didn't happen despite our best efforts whenever I was on the commission, but they were open on Election Day as vote centers all across the county. And that is a monumental achievement for Placid County.
And that was a great move to keep them open. People could avoid lines by going to one of those. Absolutely.
Amen. I would second that and just say amen to that. Really excellent work they did.
I'll just add that from a social science perspective, that the states that have the most liberal voting laws, and I mean that in the sense of promoting, you know, voter participation, mainly the ones in the West, even controlling for other factors like higher levels of education and income, that kind of thing, do see a slight uptick in voter turnout overall. So if that's something that's important to us, then there are lots of states that can lead the way. And voting by mail, maybe even just removing the excuse and the application and the absentee, as now have 5 states. I mean, I'm from the state of Washington. I have a 45-year-old sister who's never voted any other way. Because they've had it for 2 decades. She was surprised to learn that other states didn't do it that way. You gotta love federalism. but they love it. And now, you know, the rest of the country has a lot more of a taste than they had before. And so I think that really the COVID pandemic is actually gonna accelerate a policy diffusion process that was already well underway.
So I just have a quick follow-up question to that, because we're already almost halfway there and we're like a third of the way through what I want to go through, and it's great, but I'm like, okay. So what are some things about voting, some issues with voting that might be taken up in the legislature? Do either party see kind of ways that they're going to change how voting occurs in Arkansas? Or if not, that's okay too, but I feel like I have to ask.
I just wanted to ask really quickly too, because I wondered this. I know that we authorized the early vote centers, and multiple early vote centers tends to work best. In 2013, I think that's right. And we had them all over Washington County. I actually got to work at Bud Walton Arena. It's my first time as a poll worker. And then at Central Methodist Church. But I wondered how counties are authorized to do it, but not required to do it. Do we know how many counties of Arkansas, 75 counties, did take advantage of the vote centers? I couldn't find it. And I looked.
Looks like something we'll have to look into.
Okay. Somebody report back. I need the data.
Story, I guess. You know, I'll start calling. But yeah, are there kind of plans to, with issues concerning voting in the legislature? Or go ahead, Mr. Davis.
I'm not in the legislature, and so I can't speak to what they're going to take up. But what I will say simply is, one thing I think they absolutely should take up is when we can start counting absentee ballots. We really need that. We've seen that all. We didn't really have a huge issue in Arkansas, but we've seen that all across the nation. Today, there's out there counting. They're still counting in Pulaski County, and the results have to be certified tomorrow. And so, if we start counting these things earlier, we get better results and more reliable results, and we don't have people like Cervillo and Hudson and Wing and I'm sorry, I just forgot his name, waiting for results a week later.
So absolutely, Jason, I couldn't agree more. Not only canvassing them sooner, but counting them sooner. But I think that one of the benefits to canvassing them sooner is also empowering them to contact the voter whose absentee ballot may need to be cured sooner. You have people that have faith in the system, have submitted a ballot, and they assume that they had a voice in the election, and for whatever reason, it wasn't counted. And if due to their failure, due to an honest error or whatever, but if we have an opportunity to notify them sooner, and they have an opportunity to come cure that, it just gives them a bigger trust in the process. A couple of things I do hope would be addressed around election and voting, Sarah, would be one, I think you've got to give some flexibility to the counties. They know where their voters are. They know who they are. Pulaski County, as was mentioned earlier, with the drop-off box, closed the street and had the drop-off box. I think there are some counties that would including Pulaski County, that would benefit probably some from mobile early voting sites where they could move them to satellite libraries in other parts of their counties or high traffic areas in other parts of their county. I think you really ought to give the counties the, maybe not a shall do, but an opportunity to if they want to. And then one other thing that really has to be addressed is, especially in Northwest Arkansas, we have got to offer a bilingual ballot. Mm-hmm. And we also, there are some antiquated laws that started out with absentee ballots but apply on election day for people whose first language isn't English. Only one person, a person can only translate for five people. So imagine in some precincts in some parts of the state, finding enough people to translate for enough people. And that's not five per day, that's five per cycle. So that really needs to be addressed. And I would hope that the legislators on both sides of the aisle that represent a significant Hispanic population would take that up. It's just time for us to move on that.
Just one more data point I forgot to mention. Arkansas is one of only 17 states. So in this case, if expanding voter access is a collective good, one of only 17 states to offer the voting centers, as something that counties can do. But I think it's really important. I think a lot of Americans learned about the tremendous variety among the states in terms of how elections are conducted. But it's hard to really get people to think about unless they have experience on a commission, unless they know one of the coordinators, unless they've actually worked the polls themselves, how much latitude those individuals in the counties have. So really it's the 3,000 counties in the country that are conducting elections and making a lot of these decisions. And that latitude, this election, at least up here in Northwest Arkansas, was really neat to see, drop-offs on Saturdays and reaching into the car, and it kind of solved the ID issue for a lot lot of people because, you know, they didn't have access to running a printer in this particular time. So they were able to show their ID there and then submit their ballots. And those were all county level decisions. So just, it's a tremendous variety that can be confusing, but it also means there are a lot of places from which we can learn and get new ideas.
On that, kind of on the topic, you know, going back to the bilingual ballot, having these machines is going to be a lifesaver in that particular, especially though, I don't know if it's the entire state or not, but I know in Platte County, you know, you insert a paper ballot into there and you select what you select the people you want, and it prints it onto the paper and then you go stick it into the machine. So it gives you a little bit of a second chance to double check and make sure your ballot's being counted correctly. But that also allows the ability to do that in a bilingual way. You can select, you know, if you need Espanol, and you can select that, and that's what you choose, and that's how you vote your ballot. I think that technology, people may complain about whether it's able to be hacked or not, but it's going to be the lifesaver for increasing voter turnout.
I want to give Senator Ervin turned her camera off and hope to help with a connection. So I want to make sure that she has a chance, because we can't see her. Like, I want to make sure that she has a chance to respond to this question as well. Hello.
Hi, hope that's better.
Yes.
I think, you know, correct. I would just say, I mean, there were a lot of decisions that are made at the county level, and it's not a one size fits all in Arkansas. Every county looks so very different from one another, and the election commissioners have a hard job, and they take that job very seriously. And I did effective as possible. I really, you know, I had a nephew in Northwest Arkansas, and he said 2 days before the voting day, said he got COVID, and what do I do? And so I called, and he was able to drive by, and people can use all the information on one screen. And that's just something you have to scroll, and if you don't know to scroll, that might be a little confusing for people. Or especially if it's a ballot initiative and you're trying to read all the information, or you don't know if there's another screen you have to go to. That was one thing that I just seemed to notice in this election. But generally speaking, you know, I think making sure people get out to vote, I've assisted people, you know, absentee ballot who were blind and elderly, and you know, so I've gone through that good system.
So before we move on to the next topic, we do have an audience question. And so someone said the Ricky Harrington campaign, which is the third party candidate against Senator Tom Cotton, won Pulaski County and earned over 30% statewide. Do you consider this a strong third party showing in the Democratic protest vote as evidence that ranked choice voting could help voters fully express themselves in the voting booth in Arkansas in the future? Mm-hmm.
I don't know that, I mean, of course it's a strong third party showing in Pulaski County, and you can't deny Mr. Harrington that, or the Libertarian Party that credit, and they deserve that. However, I think it's an anomaly based on the fact that the Democrats didn't have a candidate against Senator Cotton, or didn't have one that disappeared late, I guess would be the answer. So I think you saw a protest vote. I think you saw Democrats that voted, we're not going to vote for Tom Cotton, but that didn't want to undervote. I don't think this is some third party insurgents in Arkansas. However, I do think, and I'm an advocate even with those in my own party that don't agree, that the ability to ranked choice throws a few people off, but the open primary possibility, anything you can do to give people an opportunity to vote for who they think is the best candidate and encourage them to come vote, we should be doing. And open primaries has shown that it's doing that. So I think that maybe this isn't the right showing of why it's important, but since you brought it up, it's very important that we take a look at it in Arkansas.
Okay, I think we're gonna move on. we talk about election night, we have to move on. And so
trust me, Sarah, I don't wanna talk about us not having a Democratic candidate against Tom Cotton anymore.
Well, in that case, we could stop if we need to. I'd love to.
This is Senator Ervin. the only thing I would say is I wasn't surprised at the results with Senator Tom Cotton. I personally think he's a phenomenal man and a great senator. I know that there's a lot of folks that do not like him, but that was a protest vote as well. But I will submit that, you know, anybody in the state of Arkansas who meets a threshold, who is a citizen, should run for office, no matter what their party affiliation is. I think it just brings a mixture to the table, and everybody has that constitutional right. And I think it's supported, and I like to see anybody put their name on the ballot, and no matter how they want to put their name on the ballot, I think it's the right thing for our state.
Thank you. If so, you're just tuning in, you're watching Issues That Matter, What's Next, a recap and look forward of the 2020 election. I want to move on to a different topic, which are the ballot initiatives that Arkansans decided to pass and not pass in the general election. So we'll just go right down the line. So Arkansans voted to pass issue one, which continues a 0.5% sales tax for state roads and highways on a permanent basis. Of the three proposals, it received the most votes and passed by a 10-point margin. Dr. Perry, this measure had a 62% approval according to the Arkansas poll, and it passed with over a 55% of the vote. How unusual is it for voters to vote for a tax?
It might surprise people to learn that it's actually not unusual for citizens to approve taxes and fees when they're tied to specific services. So fuel taxes tied to roads and highways, those fare well in many states and many communities. It's the kind of black box taxes that most Americans tend not to like. And there are actually examples this year outside of Arkansas. Governing Magazine or Stateline had an article about it today, kind of a wrap up of what the other states, right? Meanwhile, back at the ranch, other states were doing all kinds of things with their ballot measures. Illinois turned back an income tax measure with no clear plan, according to its opponents at least. California turned back a property tax measure, right? Those are kind of classic black box type taxes. They're also more equitable or less regressive than sales tax, but they're the least popular uniformly. Arizona, however, approved a tax increase because it was tied to education. So this is something we know at the local level, and it tends to be true at the state level as well. So it's really not unusual at all.
And what is the impact of this measure passing in Arkansas? That's for everyone.
One of the things I think is interesting about it, I'm going to let Senator Irvin go on this one because I was going to ask a question of her anyways.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that also the campaign around issue one was very well executed, and it was very thorough, and it was done early on in the election cycle. So I think that's one of the reasons why that passed with a larger margin, is because it was effectively communicated to the voters. I also believe that it's tangible and people can see it. So I would agree with Dr. Perry's analysis about the black box taxes. I sat on the tax reform task force, and I can tell you, yes, she's correct about what the different things that she said. So it's tangible. People can see it. People understand it. People understand that it is an impact to economic development in the state of Arkansas. It is a tax increase, so I think people vote against it for that sole reason. But again, it is a tangible something that's attached to, that they can see the results of that. And then beyond that, I think it was an effective campaign, and you had some strong voices that were communicating on its behalf.
Arkansans vote for roads, and they trust their governors. BB got one through. And Governor Hutchinson got behind this one, and that's why it passed. Also, recently, I don't think we've seen anything fail as a ballot initiative in Arkansas. But people like their roads, and ultimately, it may not look like they think it's going to look like in their community as far as spending goes. But they know if there's not any money, they're not getting any. And the governor getting behind it. There was a great work done on the campaign itself, but anytime you have a popular governor getting behind something like that, it's going to pass. Hey, and it took the onus off the legislature, because if the legislators had done this and passed this, even though the majority of the public supported it, they'd be arraigned for passing a tax increase. So the governor helped them get it on the ballot as a ballot initiative, and then he convinced the people.
Remember, too, in 1988 or so, that Governor Huckabee actually backed, right? The first significant road bonds issue in like 40, 50 years, maybe since the Sigma Math days. So yes, it's a very common way to move forward that doesn't have the political consequences that some other methods do.
You know, kind of on that, so I just noticed somebody popped up in the chat saying Platt County didn't support this issue. And there was one big reason, that's because of I-30. I know you can't see that, I'm pointing out my window to I-30. But that was my biggest question. The question I was going to ask the senator as well is, do you really think that people truly understood this issue? Because it changed on like basically the last week of the election, whenever the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot use this money for I-630 and I-30. But that's where the money was being used for. Do people really understand that this money is designed for rural communities to expand highways? Or were they voting for 630 and I-30, or voting against 630 and I-30 for that matter?
Senator, I agree. And I think that's a very good question. There was a booklet that was mailed out that showed the impact to every county, and to the Turn Back funds. And so I don't have that book with me, but every single county, and it showed the different projects that were on the, you know, kind of on the list, and then how much impact that would be towards every county, according to their Turn Back funds. And so, I mean, I think a lot of folks understood that, and that was communicated throughout the state, probably more so word of mouth or through Farm Bureau or through the Trucking Association, the Arkansas Association of Counties and the Municipal League, and some of those organizations that got behind it communicated that probably pretty effectively. The I-630 issue, I know that there was a lot of folks in Pulaski County that did not vote for that issue because of that. And I'm going to jump because of what you just said about, you know, up until a week before the election, it changed. And that goes to issue number three, and moving that collection and that turning in of signatures up. And one of the reasons why I thought that was important was because of the amount of money that is being spent sometimes on these ballot initiatives. And then when you kind of get the rug pulled out from you really quickly right before the election, you know, that seems to me just very difficult, and it's not a very timely, it's a time issue that I think we run into. I think issue one faced that with that decision that was made so late in the game. And I wish we could avoid that from happening, just because these people put so much of their time and their energy behind these ballot initiatives.
Let's move on to issue two, which Arkansans also passed, which modifies how term limits work in the Arkansas state legislature. So, why do you believe it passed? What is the impact of this measure passing?
Well, one of the things that we know is that this has been on the ballot four times since 1992, and Arkansans have said every single time they want term limits. What's interesting, I think, is that this measure actually arguably loosened term limits, I think quite significantly, but I've actually done quite a lot of research about ballot measures and what people know about them and don't know about them. And probably no one at this forum is in that boat, but it's not much. Most of us don't. And you think about what they actually see on the ballot, which also probably not coincidentally isn't much, especially in the case of the referred amendments. So they saw term limits, they're pro-term limits, and that's what we see. It's another very well-crafted legislative referendum to change things up a little bit.
That's exactly right. In 92, Arkansas votes for a Democrat for president for the first time in a long time, but then passes term limits to get all the Democrats out of the legislature. And that was the motivation. So Arkansans love term limits. What they don't love, and what they'll come to understand, is the exactly how these things are worded. The last term limit adjustment they passed also gave everybody in Little Rock a raise and changed some other things around. The backlash may not come immediately, but it does come. This is a little more liberal term limit than what was there. You can argue either way on term limits, but I can tell you, the more and more you limit those part-time legislators, the more and more you give the agencies and the bureaucracy control in Little Rock. regardless of which party you support. You're handing it over to the agencies and the bureaucracies.
This is Senator Missy Ervin. I agree. I agree. I did not, I've not voted for these referrals, and I would agree. It does give the executive branch and the agencies a lot more power when you have term limits. And I think you'll find people from very broad ends of the spectrum that agree on that point. Now, if I can get former Representative Gray to agree with Representative John Payton, you know, that's doing something. And so I would agree with that. And because the legislative branch is the people's branch, that is the branch that represents the people. And if you do it correctly and listen to your constituents and really vote, you know, that is the people's branch. And so I have a problem with the term limits, referendums. The way they are crafted, and I would, it just gives the executive branch a lot more control and power, especially the agencies.
I see that argument, but I'd also point out that in the past 30 years, there have been five term limits have appeared on the ballot five times, four of which have actually been counted. Of the ones that have been legislatively proposed, they've all expanded term limits. Of the ones that have been citizen opposed, they've all restricted term limits. This one obviously has been an expansion because now, you can have, if Mike Beebe gets bored and wants to go back to legislature, he can go back to legislature now. Alan Kirk can back to legislature. And so you're able to bring people back into the legislature, which can be a good thing for our state, to be honest, because you get experience in doing that, but it can also be a bad thing because you also get stale ideas. And that is the ultimate argument for term limits. At what point do you say we need experience? What point do you say we need new ideas and to open up government to other people and new age ideas? So I don't think we've seen the end of term limits on the ballot.
I'm going to move on to issue three, which was the only ballot initiative that Arkansans didn't pass, which would have modified Arkansas citizen initiative process, including pushing up when the deadline was due for signatures. It also would have increased the number of counties where voter signatures would have been needed to be collected. So why do you think this initiative failed, and what does this initiative failing mean for Arkansas?
So one, the governor didn't get behind it. The governor did not get, even though this was something that the chamber supported, that to my chagrin, Farm Bureau supported, the governor didn't get behind it. That's the biggest factor. Secondarily, I'm hoping that Arkansas is trending to, if we don't understand it, we're going to vote no, which is what it should be. And this was confusing. I talked to a lot of friends who came down on either side of the issue once I explained it to them. But at the end of the day, when the people realize that, okay, only the legislature is going to be able to put changes. Only the party that's in control, regardless of which party is going to be able to put forward changes in an easier fashion than what this would allow. And we wouldn't have things that were overwhelmingly popular in Arkansas, an increase in the minimum wage twice, medical marijuana, casino gambling for those who are in favor of it. Looking forward to further elections, those who are supportive of a statewide wet county initiative. Those things would not get on the ballot if it weren't for the ability for citizen-led initiatives, and this hampered it too much. But I think the major factor, take all the politics out of it, the major factor is the governor didn't get behind it.
I would just add that there's no easier sell for no than the word undemocratic, which was a very effective tool. But I actually think this is one of those rare times, because it was a measure that confused people and there wasn't that much information on the ballot. And we know from research that's the first time most people experience the measure, despite our best efforts, right? Ag Extension and a lot of other people, a lot of opinionators. But I think this is one of those rare times when substantial grassroots activity made a difference. And this was mentioned before. These legislatively backed amendments have been passing at a very high rate, more than 80%, actually just in the last two decades, as compared to about 50-60% for the citizen initiated ones. So this one failed because the League of Women Voters, through lawsuits and social media, got the word out, at least to opinion leaders, that it would make it harder for those petition or demanded ballot measures to qualify to go to a statewide vote. And it was interesting to actually see that in action. You do sometimes, but it's a really hard case to make, but sometimes groups make it.
So, go ahead, Senator Ervin.
I think it was I don't think that issue three was effectively communicated, and I think that's one of the reasons why it failed. Also, the governor did not get it behind it. I agree with that as well. But I also, for the folks in rural Arkansas, what I don't want to see there, we need to be careful about the word citizen-led initiative. What we see quite often is corporate-led ballot initiatives. And we have seen that in California. Uber spent, I think, over $200 million on a ballot initiative in the state of California. The casino ballot initiative was really driven by corporations. Medical marijuana, it was a mixture of corporations and big business that teamed up with citizens, but really big business also drove that. So I think we have to be really careful. We need to communicate those ballot initiatives so people understand them, that what they're voting on. I don't think we do that very well. But what I do not want to see is a free-for-all with whoever can buy the ballot initiative and not effectively communicate it, or communicate it in such a way that is misleading, which then bypasses the legislative process. And so I'm afraid we have to find a balance on this issue. And again, like I said, if the deadline is so close to the election, and these people have put in a tremendous amount of time, energy, and resources into passing a ballot initiative and then get the rug pulled out from underneath them, I don't think that's right, number one. And number two, rural counties need to have a heads up, and they don't get one when are collecting signatures. And so I think there is a problem there, and I think there needs to be a balance.
Certainly agree with Senator Irvin there, Sarah, that we don't want to see big money come in and mislead and help get candidates or initiatives elected that aren't necessarily explaining themselves or talking to Arkansas. However, what she mentioned, all those she cited were problems did pass by overwhelming majority of Arkansans, and the rural counties still get to vote on them. So.
We have a question from John and Lisa. Who said, is it fair that ballot titles submitted by the legislature don't have to be clear while public ones do? That could be a quick yes or no. Go ahead, Jason.
Absolutely not. I think that both the legislature and the people should have the same standard. And it should be abundantly clear to the people what they're voting on. Four-lane highway means four-lane highway.
Standard ought to be higher for legislators. It ought to be higher for legislators. That's their job. It ought to be higher. Public-led initiative should not take a backseat to the legislative ones. Sorry, Dr. Perry.
No.
This is Senator Irvin. I'll just say I think they absolutely have to be clear. And as somebody who has authored one in the legislature, it must be clear, or it will be thrown off. So we have seen that happen with legislative ballot initiatives as well. They have to be very, very clearly written. And they poured a lot of time and energy over making sure that they're clearly written, and I believe that they should be.
We can move on to the next one. I know you have a lot to get through.
Oh, it's okay. And then, so the next question is, and honestly, like a couple words or less, what do you, for petition-led initiatives, what do you see in the future as a future election now that it isn't as, now because this was rejected, what are some things you see in the near future to be on the ballot from petition-led initiatives?
Well, I haven't been in contact actually with this group. I've just been following, or the various groups, but the League of Women Voters and its allies surely will be back with a proposal for an independent redistricting commission. I think that the way that measure died, and I'm no fan of direct democracy, just FYI, but the way that it died at the hands of the Secretary of State and the Supreme Court felt really like dirty pool. And I think it just energized them. Now you just made them mad. So it'll be a decade later until, some of these things take effect. But I think we're not done with the recreational marijuana groups. They've showed tremendous energy and sustained energy. We'll probably see more on felony disenfranchisement and restoring some of those rights, because it's something that we see nationwide. It's never the last of the term limits people either. I mean, they've been steaming since 2014 because of the undoing through a really craftily worded measure in 2014, as we mentioned before, with Amendment 94. So those are the ones that I've been kind of watching, and maybe y'all have a better idea.
No, I would echo recreational marijuana, open primaries, independent redistricting, and honestly, because money drives everything, a statewide wet dry vote on alcohol. I think you'll see all those things.
This is Senator Ervin. I would say that I think the issue 3 is not, I think that's going to come back. In a certain way, I think tort reform is maybe back on the ballot as well. I would add those two.
I definitely see tort reform come back, and maybe a little too current affairs, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a push, not a successful one, but a push to limit the governor's emergency powers.
Yes, I agree with that.
So in the 6 minutes we have left, which again, there's so many things we can do. So we will go to the final kind of question, which is what is on the agenda for both parties in the 2021 general session?
So I'm going to defer to the senator.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm trying to turn my video back on and off, so I hope it's okay. You can hear me. I mean, we're driving. Good question. Lots of things. I think the pandemic, I sit on the CARES steering task force. I think you're correct on the executive orders and declarations and the expenditures of funds, I think is going to be an issue. Tax reform will be on the issue. There's so many issues related to the pandemic regarding healthcare and education. I think those things are going to be at the forefront, making sure, you know, that the flexibility is there for the school districts. And the issues, broadband. I cannot ever speak more about broadband. You know, I think that's the game changer for the state of Arkansas. I think every child should be able to have access to high-speed internet at their home. I know that looks differently across the state with the different types of technologies to deliver that. But I do believe when you talk about education, then really that's got to be at the forefront of what we are talking about. I also think you're going to see some, you know, you're always going to see the same issues kind of pop up. But generally overall, you know, from my perspective, you see a lot of individually pushed issues versus party issues. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. But that's where you see a lot of crossover voting too. So maybe that's a good thing.
So it's the governor's lame duck legislative session, Sarah. So from a Democratic point of view, like it or not, last Tuesday night, Democrats lost the end of the swing legislative districts. They are all now basically safe Democratic districts. So those legislators have a unique opportunity to not worry about reelection. They're in such a super minority that if they want something to get passed, it's because the other side wants it. It's not because they've not hurt someone's feelings or worked well with them, but because it's a good idea and the other side thinks it does. So these Democrats have a real opportunity to really show the differences in the priorities for Arkansas, differences in priorities for the budget. I looked at the governor's budget proposal. There are a couple of things I absolutely agree with, even though some of the Republicans, some of the Democrats won't. Lowering the used car sales tax threshold which directly helps working Arkansans. However, I think you're going to hear Democrats talk about an earned income tax credit that works better for working Arkansans. And then I think you're going to really see, I would hope you'll see some Democrats step up and push for some judicial reform, for social justice issues, and understanding that, and it's definitely not my phrase, but it so rings true, is that the budget is a moral document. And where do we put our priorities in Arkansas? Are we putting them in cutting taxes for people that are moving to the state? Or putting those priorities on pre-K and healthcare and telemedicine and things like that in rural Arkansas.
So So we're cutting it close, but I have one more audience question that I would like to ask that could be pretty, I think, a quick answer. This is from Carol Young, who asks, what do both parties think about abolishing the Electoral College? So we're going big again.
I thought there'd be more movement in 2000, and there wasn't, when suddenly everybody was like, what's in the Constitution? a few states, right, kind of considered the proportional representation that Maine and Nebraska do to, like, you know, have like a partway move. But right now, the states that would have to make those change are the states, the very states that are advantaged by the institution of the Electoral College. So even if people want it, it's actually be as mainly Democrats want it and people in urban centers want it, they're actually less likely to get it given the way the U.S. constitutional amendment process is structured.
Right. If, you know, the fact that you have to amend the Constitution, which apparently surprises quite a few people, even in my household, to accomplish this task, it means it's not likely to happen anytime soon, but the push is probably still going to continue going forward. I would just say the Electoral College serves a purpose, and it serves a very, in my opinion, important purpose, and it works. In more cases than not, it works just the way that it would. You know, look at this time. The person who won Electoral College also won the popular vote. 2016 was in the history of the United States was technically a fluke because it hasn't happened that many times compared to the 46 men who have or will occupy the office. But the process works. I think we are opening ourselves up to more harm than good to try to remove it. If we do change it, I would definitely go more in favor of a proportional allocation versus complete abolition.
Yeah, I would. This is Senator. I would agree with those comments.
I think you make an argument on both sides, whether you're for it or against it, if you're on the winning side or the losing side, especially here in Arkansas. Even Republicans who I talked to said, well, all these people in Arkansas voted for Trump, and he only gets 6 votes from Arkansas. So I think the argument's made on either side, for it or against it, that sometimes people feel like their vote either doesn't count because of the Electoral College or that their vote wouldn't have a say if it wasn't for it. So, I mean, you're talking about amending the Constitution. It's a big undertaking to consider all those arguments.
So that concludes tonight's forum. I want to again thank our participants for coming out tonight on their screens and giving us a view of their cars or their offices or their homes. I really appreciate it. And so this has been the latest panel in our Issues That Matter series. Please share comments on this forum and ideas for future forums by emailing comments at ualrpublicradio.org or through the social media accounts of the Central Arkansas Library System, the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, or KUAR. Again, this panel will air on KUAR 89.1 at 7 p.m. On Monday, November 16th, and again on November 19th. Keep your eyes open for information about our next panel, which will occur again digitally sometime in the new year. On behalf of the Central Arkansas Library System, the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, and KUAR 89.1, thank you for attending, and thank you and good night.